Okay, and welcome to episode 3 of Fire for Effect, the Flames of War podcast that always fails a fearless motivation check. On the show this week, we've got myself, Andy Brown, Fraser Green.
Hello.
And James Hammy Hamilton.
Hi there.
Dave is not with us this week, so you'll notice a slightly shorter episode when we cover the battle reports.
I don't know, I've got some dice to moan about.
Okay, so start off with this week in wargaming, guys. What have you been up to?
Go on then. Week in wargaming, as we can see from the marvellous table we're sitting around, I've been playing a game called Blitz: A World in Conflict, which is a big board game. Well, no, a small board game. It's a cut down version of a game called World in Flames, not Flames of War, but World in Flames. Strategic, whole of World War II. Just learning the game at the moment. It's an interesting thing. Does it meet its objective of having a playing time of 5 or 6 hours? It might. Well, when we know the rules, I can report back. At the moment,
we've got a map of the world covered in various tokens and stuff. Is it? It's not card driven or anything like Twilight Struggle, is it?
Traditional dice and moves.
Dice-based games.
Turn sequences, combat results, tables.
The way forward is card games. Card-based games are the way forward.
Quartermaster General, that's what you want to play. Yeah. That's a superb award game. But this is, it's been published by Compass Games, designed by a guy I used to communicate with quite a lot called Dave Lelacheur, who's a Canadian. I used to be very involved in World in Flames years ago. And I just saw this came out and thought I'd better give it a try. It's interesting so far.
How much was it?
Lots of money. It's got a... I can't understand why it's quite as expensive as it is. The retail price of this game is, and we are all sitting down, £80.
£80?
£80 for basically...
Christ, swearing the podcast.
A paper map and some cardboard counters. I can only assume we're being charged for the... Well, we are being charged for the design, the graphics, the work, and the effort that's put into it. And it does take time and effort to make this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a smallish company...
If you're worried about the component quantity, it's pretty scary.
Yeah. It's one of the sad things about these games is that it looks like it would translate very, very well to, like, Vassal or Tabletopia or some sort of online gaming equivalent and stuff, and it's... It can be a bit complicated sometimes when you can have what could be a simple game that you could play online and somebody takes the rules and all the components and essentially puts it online for free. Because I play Twilight Struggle a bit over Vassal, and it plays, you know, it plays quite well once you get used to the system.
What else have I done? I've built some 45mm Soviet anti-tank guns, because you can never have enough 45mm Soviet anti-tank guns.
Battlefront, PSC?
Plastic Soldier.
Plastic Soldier.
Yeah.
What do you think of them?
I love the guns. They're very, very nice. And they actually won't fall apart, unlike the metal. I hate metal guns, just because there's not enough space for things to stick together.
Yeah.
I wish more people would make more plastic guns. There you go. That's my request. Although Battlefront have done their Gods of War now. I've got a set of those waiting to be stuck together.
You had a look at the sprues? Are they all right?
No, I've looked at reviews. Okay. I've just got them sitting there still in shrink. Nice. How about that for discipline?
Nice. Okay, well, myself, I finally got started getting some more of my Team Yankee stuff underway, having now painted the entirety of the Star Wars universe. Finished me M1 Abrams tanks, got them decaled up and weathered with some nice weathering powders, and I've just finished up inking and painting the M113s and the improvised tow vehicles.
Improved tow vehicles. They'd be very upset if they thought.
The Soviets improvised the weapons, not the Americans. I've got left to paint the M109s, which I got off you, and then I'm going to work on the infantry platoons. So I'm not quite sure how I want to do the infantry platoons at the moment, because I'm kind of going for a winter theme, so like winter camo and stuff like that. And what I'm thinking is I might make use of the Battlefront plastic rubble bases and do kind of like Americans helping out in Chechnya in the winter kind of thing. So, you know, sort of taking completely nothing from the novel and just going with my own ideas.
You wouldn't
and
be
stuff.
The only person to have not followed the novel for the
colour
schemes.
Exactly.
I've seen plenty of people doing the Team
exactly.
Yankee stuff in Desert Storm colours.
Yeah, exactly. So. That's it. It's kind of, you know, the Pandora's box has been opened and imagination can run free now with whatever we think happened in the world in, you know, alternate 1985 and stuff like that. So, yeah, so once I've got those done, that'll give me 75 points. So then I can actually get around to playing it. So just want to, when we've got a few more Russian players up, I know there's a couple of local lads have been doing some Russians, and Fraser himself is threatening to do Russians. So
I'm threatening to open my box of BMPs.
So what about yourself, Fraser? How have you been getting on?
Early war Japanese. I'm actually roughly midway through painting a infantry platoon for the army that I'm doing. Haven't been able to get hold of any of the tanks. I need an awful lot of Type 89s. So one from QRF to the test model, and that's for sculpt, and that's pretty good.
I've got a Type 95 that I got from QRF, because Battlefront put... Maybe it might not be so bad when they do the Pacific book, but Battlefront do the Japanese tank platoons in early war in threes or fours.
And boxes of five.
And they sell them in boxes of five. Yep. So I bought a box of Type 95s with the idea of doing two platoons, but of course you don't do a blister. So I had to buy a second box of Type 95s because the QRF one is ever so slightly smaller than the Battlefront one, and it just looks really odd to me.
Mixing manufacturers, always dangerous.
Yeah, it's not so bad if you're like, I'm going to have Battlefront infantry and QRF tanks, but mixing two
manufacturers for the same piece of kit.
Even for infantry, it's not that bad. Like some
real people aren't all the same height.
Absolutely, absolutely. Some manufacturers mix and match on the base, but I think a lot of that depends on the style as well. If you've got, you know, like early plastic soldier, which are more like scale toy soldiers compared to the later sort of chunky hands kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, well, if you mix and match them, they might not look as good.
The new Battlefront plastics, the plastic Soviet infantry, are actually heading back to the more scale. They've not got quite such big heads and big hands.
All right.
They're much slimmer figures.
Which one?
Strelgovy box.
The Strelgovy box.
The one you picked up the other week.
Oh, the Battlefront one.
Battlefront ones.
They are. That's the other thing that I've been working on.
They're very nice, fine miniatures.
Yeah. They're brilliant. Even I can see the detail on them.
Not unlike the Command Decision figures,
which don't quite
have the same pumpkin heads.
Yeah.
So actually, you'd probably find that Battlefront wouldn't mix with Battlefront.
Well,
if you
the interesting thing is
the wrong pet set.
One of the companies that never seems to get much of a mention, and I think their miniatures match really, really well with Skytrex / Command Decision, is Forged in Battle.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big fanfare when they brought their first stuff out, especially kind of over here. That it was like, oh, cheap alternative and stuff. And then
it is brilliant. The sculpt.
I don't know if it's because they're harder to get hold of and they're not in as many shops.
I know why I don't buy Forged in Battle for figures.
Go on.
It's because they only do 2/3 of the range.
Hmm?
They do. If you look, for example, at I don't know. I thought about doing Polish.
Right.
And I looked at the Battle from Polish. I looked at the Forged in Battle Polish.
Hmm.
And you can get most of what you need,
right?
But not all of what you need,
right? Okay.
And there's not that many poses if you're getting a large unit. There's a lot of repeat, so you might find that there's 10 of each pose in a box. But the general quality of the miniatures is very good.
Yeah,
very, very good. The same company are doing some ancients now.
Yes,
Westwind are doing quite a big range of ancients.
Yeah.
So. That's the other thing I've done in the last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved in a demo introductory playtesty game for a new set of Ancients rules.
Oh, was that at Moore's?
Yeah, the Manchester Club, Manchester Area War Games. And that's a game called Mortis et Gloriam. I think that's it. Mortis or Mortem et Gloriam. Anyway, no, Mortis et Gloriam. Get it right.
Which means what? I'm guessing that's Latin.
Death and Glory, effectively.
Oh, okay.
It's a set of ancient rules. Some people would argue that this isn't true, but if you actually look at numbers, it probably is true. Ancients, tabletop ancients, miniature tournament wargaming certainly has really fragmented and withered in the last 10 years. So 10 years ago, 10 years ago was still just about the heyday of DBM. The World Championships in Athens had 170 players from all over the world, from about 18 countries. You know, very, very good showing for a tournament. But now, UK tournaments, you're probably looking at, for singles, 12, 14, 16 players in any one tournament, period, any one set of rules, which is disappointing. DBM died, Field of Glory replaced it. DBMM was a derivation of DBM. Some people liked that. Some people went to Field of Glory. Field of Glory's withering. DBMM's sort of stable but not growing. You've got Art de la Guerre. You've got Impetus. There's a whole pile of rule sets coming out. None of which quite scratch the itch. Fire and Sword Renaissance. So slightly different period. But Mortem et Gloriam, or Mortis et Gloriam, is trying to be to bring the fun back into Ancients. Field of Glory, arguably, it's a bit dry. It's maybe not quite fun enough. So I had a demo and helped out the guy who's designing those rules with the demo. Looks quite promising. We've got a little mini pre-release tournament going on down in Daventry next month. And then there's another one in Oxford, and there's a proper full-on tournament at BritCon for it. So that's all heading to be released this year. So that's something else I've been doing this week in Wargaming. Sweet. Shock horror.
Great, great. Good, good. So the other thing, we've got upcoming events. So 9th and 10th of April, we've got the Mid-War Irish Masters, Irish Nationals. Yep. That's in Belfast.
Quite a few Brits going over for that, I believe. Yep.
Also on the 9th of April, Breakthrough Assault guys are running an early war tournament at their Entoyment venue.
Down in Bournemouth.
Then 23rd and 24th, you've got a choice of events if you like Mid-War. So we've got Dak Dak Go 2 in Brighton, which is themed red versus blue.
Desert terrain.
North Africa only, I believe.
I think they're moving it very slightly later than the original one, because the first Dak Dak Go 1, they wanted you to stick to Alamein period or earlier forces. So like a Sherman was a heavy tank. It's quite interesting.
Okay, because you went to the first one.
I did. It was great. Really good event. Really, really good.
Cool.
Trouble is, this year it's clashing with...
This year it clashes with the Art of War 2.
Art of War.
Oh, sorry, is it just Art of War?
It's Art of War, this one.
Right, okay.
2 is the second one in the year, which is, I think, September, October.
But
I think the date's out. This is Art of War.
This is Art of War. So this is also Mid-War, but this is more... I think it probably has... It has some of Steve's crazy rule ideas.
That's not a crazy rule idea at all. You can bring two different lists.
Right.
You just decide before the event how many times you're playing each list. The two lists do not have to be in any way related.
Yes, that was it.
So if you want to bring an Axis and Allied list, then you can.
Yep.
And
we did actually have a really good interview with Steve and Tim that we recorded at Co-Rivalry, and then like a muppet, I accidentally overwrit it with Dave Madigan talking about New Zealand. So,
good.
Unfortunately.
well, special message to Dave Madigan.
Yeah.
Cricket. Sorry.
So we'll post up the Dave Madigan interview later, but apologies to Steve and Tim for overwriting. It was actually a really, really good interview. But yeah, so that's April 23rd and
24th. And I can't go to either.
Sanctuary in Sutton and Ashfield. Which is like an old... renovated church turned into a wargaming venue.
Old church turned into a wargaming venue. Nice place.
Yep.
Bit drafty at times.
Yeah.
But
So then May 7th and 8th, we've got Campaign.
Campaign's
a big one.
Brilliant one, that.
Yeah. So do you want to explain to us Campaign for
those who don't know, who don't know. It's a league. Well, it's the National League, is the overall title of it. It's a tournament for teams of three players. Each set of teams are then piled into divisions. There are multiple divisions. Each division has six teams in it. Over the course of the weekend, each team in a division will play every other team in that division. The team at the top of a division wins the division. The team at the bottom gets demoted to the lower division.
It's a full-on
you've got promotion, relegation, and all
Premier
that
League
kind
conference.
Of stuff. Absolutely, yeah. last year there were four divisions.
Right.
And there were three teams from Bournemouth, one in Division 1, one in Division 2, one in Division 3. And I seem to remember that the Division 1 team got demoted, the Division 3 team got promoted, and Division 2 didn't go either way. So there are three Bournemouth teams, in theory, in Division 2. Wow. I think one of the Bournemouth teams has imploded this year for various reasons, so there's only two Bournemouth teams in 2.
Oh, okay.
Division 1, lots of good players, lots of very solid stuff. Division 2 is still pretty good players. Mm. Division 3 and 4, if you enter the tournament, you're probably going one of the Division 3 or 4. And it's quite nice and fun. So the great thing about campaign, really, in my book, is that because each team's made up of one early war, one mid war, one late war player. Players can bring an army up for each side if you want, so you can avoid blue and blue games. And generally speaking, you can play whichever period you want. All the games are early. Cool. Brilliant tournament. Highly recommended. Go for it.
So it's BH, British Historical.
No, it's not. No? It's Milton Keynes War Games.
Milton Keynes War Games.
Run by Mad Lemmy, a.k.a. Will Denham.
Right. Brilliant.
Generally, so, good run. Oh, and the losers get the wooden spoon.
Oh.
They're very special, decorated wooden spoon.
A special wooden spoon.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Not just any old wooden spoon.
No. We're talking highly special decorated wooden spoons.
Wow. So we'll stick all the contact details up for all those events in the show notes. So if you want to get involved with any of them, just drop the organisers an email. I'm sure spaces are still available for all of them. The campaign one, you might have to get a team together, but you'll be fine, you'll be all right.
Yeah, campaign, if you just want to go as an individual, you'll be slotted into a team.
Yeah,
That's fine. DACGO, there might be a restriction on which sides are available. I can't remember.
Okay. Okay, well, brilliant. Well, we'll take a short break, and then we'll come back. We'll get into our main chunk of the show, which is talking about Avanti in Preston. Okay.
Denmark submitted without a struggle as Nazi Germany in a lightning stroke swept the war into Scandinavia. The Danes, with hardly any army, could only yield to Nazi domination under protest. The German Navy began the attack, landing troops under the cover of guns of warships. These are the sea fighters that went into battle against the British. And the report flashed that the big German battleship Neisenau there was destroyed as the war guns boomed.
And welcome back to Fire for Effect. So, we are talking about Avanti in Preston. Now, for those of you who don't know, I think we mentioned this on the show last time. Avanti started in Stafford. It was the Stafford Games in-house one-day event. Do three a year, early war, mid-war, late war. I think they all started at 1,500 points, and then the points have kind of tweaked a little bit for various periods.
I think they started mostly 1500s.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, Stafford Games is now closed, having been taken over by Battlefield Hobbies mega corporation.
No.
Nobby will shout at me for that, I'm sure, later. So, it's the guys from Preston, Pete Entwistle, Mr. Crosby, and Sam Street have picked it up. And so, the three of us all went off. For a nice day out in Preston.
Three of us and a few others from Stockport.
And a few from Moors as well. It was quite a decent turnout.
20 players?
Something like that, yeah.
I have to look at what place I came in, and that's how many players.
So, it was at the Preston Working Men's Club. You know, it's a proper sort of classic war game event. You know, tables set up in the middle of a pub function room, you know, bar. Working men's club in the middle of a housing estate.
With a bowling green.
So none of us got any chance to bowl.
Sadly.
But yeah, you know, three games. Lunch was provided, some sandwiches, crisps, cookies. Mr. Entwistle providing nice table service. And, you know, I think it was a very smooth, well-run event. I don't really have any complaints organisation-wise. We got a nice decent set of terrain. I think a lot of it was club terrain for the Preston guys, and I think it were, I don't know if I didn't bring a table. I don't know if you guys brought a table or not.
No, we didn't. No. I asked if they needed terrain. I think some of the players brought terrain.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's nice to get a different collection of terrain.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Mm. So we had three missions. Let's start off by saying, what did we take? So Fraser, what did you take?
My Czech Panzer Company.
Okay. You're going to have to tell people what was in your Czech Panzer Company.
Czech Panzers. oh, yeah, not everyone knows that list off by heart.
No.
So it's HQ, two Panzer 38Ts, mm-hmm. Two platoons of five Panzer 38s, pattern here. Four Panzer 2s, the late one, front armour 2. Pair of 8 rads to bring it up to four platoons, some recce, and the infamous Super Stuka Party. Which is the full fat priority Stukas with the Schwer.
With the rolling thingy. Two dice, Schwer
yes,
point.
That's the one. Yeah.
So it was 1550 points early war, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was, I think, in line with last year's ETC? Question mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took Japanese infantry, Hohai Chitua. Last year's Avanti, I took Soviets too, so I flipped it around. I took the first year I did Avanti early war, I took my Japanese. Then the second year I took Soviets, and now back to the Japanese again. So HQ, cheesy banner, two platoons with cheesy banners. Then the 37mm guns.
Mm-hmm. The ones that are effectively mortars.
I think they're like 90. They're called 90mm guns. I think they're like teeny tiny howitzers or something like that. Effectively two mortars, two anti-tank guns, and then two platoons of Type 95s with the. So they're the standard mobility tank with the Type 37mm gun on top. So it's ROF 2. Anti-tank 5, I think.
Mm-hmm. Those veteran ones.
And yeah, everything fearless veteran. Yeah, everything fearless veteran. So, how many? What about yourself?
I partly based my list on what seemed a good idea, partly based on what was in my box of stuff unpainted. So, officially, it was Mittler Panzer. HQ was two Panzer 4s, front armour 3. You know it makes sense. then a platoon of two Panzer 4s, six Panzer 1s to go and assault things. Three Panzer 38Ts, because I had some spare and they're very pretty and plastic soldiery. And a pair of 88s in case I ran into anything big and scary like a KV or T-34. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So, rather than going in game-by-game analysis and blow-by-blow, because I know, you know, although Dave's not here, he's here with us in spirit, but we'll still try and... And try and keep the battle reports as brief as we can. So, first mission, we had...
Breakthrough.
I got Jeff Pearson from Moors,
mm-hmm.
Which I've never played Jeff before. I've only actually been to Moors once for my sins, because Monday night's a really awkward night for me. Although, personal life aside, it might be getting easier for me to go to Moors when we move house. But that's another story. So Jeff, lovely bloke, no issues. He was using Czech Panzers or medium Panzers?
I think it was medium, but
he had Panzer 2s, and I think he only had one platoon of Panzer 4s. I think is that the one? I think in Hellfire and Back or something, you only have one, you can only have to take one core platoon rather than two. So I think he was running one platoon of Panzer 4s.
Right, and then one. Panzer 2.
Yeah. Some infantry. And so I put him on the defensive. I chose to night attack. Mm-hmm. And it was, it's hard to expand the game, basically. What I did was I shoved both my infantry in reserve, with the idea of basically swarming the objectives. So place the objectives over by both of them by the table edge that I will arrive on. When my reserves come in, hopefully just swarm the objective. If he hasn't got to me by then, dig in. And even without the Japanese platoons being impossible to assault, it's pretty much an auto win for me, I think. I think it's very, very difficult. So basically, Jeff kind of, I don't think he really saw what I was doing. And with everything else, like my mortars and my anti-tank guns, I'd kind of deployed in my end of the table and sent one tank platoon up on the north end of the battlefield and another one down the eastern side of the battlefield, and basically was dancing around, going backwards and forwards, baiting him to come and get me. And he did come and get me, which meant that by the time my reserves arrived, he was suddenly miles away from the objective. So then basically he had a go at assaulting, and he surprisingly managed to pretty much whittle down one Japanese platoon right down to like three teams. Because even with the Nikuhaku teams, he would come in, he would get through the defensive fire, because there's no defensive fire. He would swing and kill an infantry team. Nikuhaku teams would then jump across, get like three or four hits, and he just passed every armor save. It was ridiculous. And then he wouldn't break off. So we had to keep going backwards and forwards. And literally, I think he passed about seven or eight armor saves with Panzer IIs all in a row.
So that's where all the dice rolling more than one were.
Yeah, it should have been ridiculous. Standing downwind of him.
Mm. It was quite frustrating, actually, because even though he's rolling an absolute blinder and he's smashing up my infantry platoons, because the Japanese are simply that bent, he couldn't get rid of the platoons, even going backwards and forwards and backwards mm-hmm. and forwards. And eventually he failed to counter-assault, broke off, and then I won in my turn. So I think it was 6-1, actually. Mm-hmm. It was 6-1, because unfortunately, because you have to wipe out the Japanese platoons to a man, he didn't get platoon. So it was a bit unfair on him, but, you
Japanese
know...
Japanese are unfair, full stop.
Yeah, it's one of those... Yeah.
Perfectly balanced.
Okay.
I think, you know, list criticism aside, I think it would be very easy for a Japanese platoon that goes Shishen, or Shishen, however you pronounce it, I think they should still count as broken for victory points. I think it was a small tweak. I don't think it affects the game.
It's been officially clarified that they don't.
I don't think it would be that, excellent. You know, I don't think it would make, it wouldn't break the army to be unusable, and it would make the games feel a lot better.
It does feel a bit spit off when you finally break the break in inverted commas a platoon and that you don't get any points for it. I agree.
Yeah.
But it's in some ways it's almost as you have the same with a Soviet Strelk. Mm. Strelk of a company that's got 27 teams and you kill 26 of them and you're left with the CO. Well, in fact, you kill 27 of them because you're left with the CO, the Commissar.
Mm.
Two teams left.
Mm.
And it's passing its morale because 26 times out of 27 it does with the company with the battalion commander around. You know, you're looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So, Hammy, what was your first game?
Game one, got drawn against British Armoured Regiment. I have never beaten British Armoured Regiment. Actually, not true. I won one game against BAR ever in early war. And that was only won because my opponent didn't have enough time to move on to the objective that I couldn't defend at the very end. So this game... Yes, it's true. It's true. I had nothing. That's another story. So I had to defend. Great. So I've only got at most two platoons on, and I'm being attacked by effectively a full British Armoured Regiment. Turn one, the British Armoured Regiment advanced. I had concealed, gone to ground panzers sitting behind a hill, ready to retaliate. He fired at me with 20 odd shots, got five hits, bailed three tanks, even though he was only anti-tank five in the main. one of the tanks was double bailed, but passed its morale.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, quite impressive. two of the tanks got back in. One other tank was the two IC also joined in. So I shot back with three tanks and 188 and did nothing.
So what, did you miss or did he pass arm saves?
I got two hits and they both bounced off because, you know, anti-tank 7's nowhere near good enough against armour 1. and it just kept going from there.
Right.
Basically, terrible dice, terrible saves. I think the problem is, and it's going to repeat because every game seemed to be very much like this, putting too much faith in quality kit, I'm not sure it's actually worth it.
Mm.
Because all it takes is one bad dice roll.
Yeah.
And you're gone.
But this is like the King Tiger argument, isn't it? In late war,
King Tiger is slightly different because the King Tiger does actually have the fact that it's completely invulnerable from the front.
Yeah.
You know, if you're relying on armor 3 against anti-tank 6, which tends to be the norm,
yeah,
you're only looking for a 3-up save.
Yeah,
at long range, you need a 2-up.
Yeah,
you know, you'd expect to be there, but you will roll a 1.
Mm.
A lot.
Well, you will.
Well, I'd seem to anyway.
So that was a 6-1 smash in?
Yeah. The best I managed in the closest I came to taking a platoon was, I think I actually got one of his cruiser platoons to the point where it had to take a morale check on the back of shooting it with 6 Panzer Ones and 2 8 Reds that had moved. So I had 2 20 mil shots and 24 machine gun shots into the side armour of these tanks. And I actually got them, I think, all bailed, and one of them double bailed.
Mm.
Had it failed the morale, it would have been a platoon morale test, and that would have gotten. But, you know, that's it. But it was just terrible.
Yeah.
There were some silly dice. I mean, my dice were great with that armour, with that Panzer I platoon, but it doesn't really help very much when you're firing machine guns.
Yeah.
My army was designed to fight against, at best, combined arms or possibly infantry forces.
Mm.
Game one, fighting pure tanks that are designed to fight tanks.
Yeah.
With only half my force on the table.
There did seem to be a lot of tank lists.
There were a hell of a lot of tank
lists. A lot of tank lists.
Now,
is that because of a meta shift, because of like the T-34 and, you know, and the KVs, and now people thinking I actually need to be able to fight tanks, or is it just the local guys?
The BAR is not going to be able to deal with the T-34 at all.
Mm.
Well, side shots, anti-tank fire, 7 against side armour 5, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I don't think that the BAR really have got much of an answer to a T-34. Mm. I took the Germans just because it was a stuff that needed painting. I wanted to do that. You know, it just happened to be tanks. I'd have far rather faced the BAR with my German infantry.
Mm.
Far, far rather.
So, Fraser, what about you?
So, it was breakthrough. I was attacking. Short version, I broke through. Long version, I broke through. So I was fighting BF Infantry, and I can't remember the name of the guy I was playing.
Oh, yes.
I've not played him before. Do you? James something or anything?
Yeah. I'll remember his name in a minute. Okay. I know the person. One of the Preston guys.
Well, Hammy has a think. So he'd unfortunately left a big gap in the middle of the table, about a foot wide.
Was this James Grey Wolf?
Yes,
that's it. He'd put his 25-pounders, which I was really scared of, right at the back, and left a foot gap through the middle of the table. So my first turn I doubled, my second turn I doubled, and then I sat there for 4 turns. And he pushed infantry towards me and then had to take those infantry off the table.
Right, yeah, because obviously if you can reach that objective without needing to rely on reserves, you can basically just sit there, and he's got to get through 5. I mean, how many tanks did you get to the objective?
All of them.
One or two died on the way.
Two died on the way because I was very bunched up at the end of my first turn, so 8 25-pounders had a go at me.
But yeah, like an infantry platoon trying to assault into 5 or 6 Panzer 38s.
Yeah, he moved his 2-pounders forward because that's the only thing he could do. If he didn't, he'd lose. If he, you know, he might. And I just kind of danced around them because I had the mobility.
Yeah.
So I just picked them off one at a time. He came at me with the infantry, and I got 12 hits on a platoon, and he failed 10 saves. So. Mm. Never mind.
Yeah, it was a bit one-sided, that battle.
Yeah, sounds it.
I had a one-sided slaughter, and Fraser had a one-sided victory. There you go.
Yeah.
But I didn't win 6-1. I lost a platoon because you don't win your first game 6-1.
No.
That's a schoolboy error.
No, I should have learned that. So going into game two, we had, was it no retreat or hold the line? It was one of the two.
I think it was no retreat.
No retreat. It was normal reserves and one
ambush. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, because I'd been an idiot and won 6-1, I got Mr. Charlton with his British Armoured Car Regiment, and there was so much stuff. So, from memory, I think it was 3 platoons of armoured cars. I forget which variant, but they've got a 15mm gun on them.
Humber,
maybe, yeah. A platoon of light tanks with the 50mm gun on them.
Mm-hmm.
2 platoons of 2-pounders. I think the 2-pounder Poys.
Was that on the back of the truck?
Yeah. Yeah. Or some one platoon might have been towed ones and the others on porties.
Mm-hmm.
We had one or two platoons, one platoon of 18, 25 pounders with trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And a platoon of infantry, I think, for some grunt work. Maybe two platoons of infantry.
Bofors.
Oh, what yes, and the Bofors as well. Yes, the Bofors. I think the Bofors were... The Bofors weren't on trucks, but they had trucks as transport.
Yeah, transfer. Yeah.
So I contemplated trying a night attack just for giggles, just to see, because I thought, you know what, it's Steve, I'm going to lose anyway. I might as well just try and catch him off guard. But in the end, I just thought, you know what, there's so much firepower for me to... You know, my normal tactic is double the first turn and then... run at them in night and hope that
I seem to remember you running at a load of T-26s at night and pulling that off.
Yeah, yeah, which would have been fantastic had I actually legally should have been running at T-26s. Unfortunately, we forgot that you were always attack as well.
Yeah, I seem to remember though that, you know, 10 tanks didn't actually stop the Japanese at night.
Yes, but if I remember rightly, you'd put some of your T-26s 5 inches away and then rolled a one to see how far you could see.
Quite possibly.
So I didn't run into 10 tanks worth. I ran into like 2 tanks worth that could actually fire and then assaulted
rest. You're assaulting at night, you know. If you can get the assault in at night.
There was a lot of firepower.
You hit on fives because you're a veteran.
Yeah.
He needs 6 hits to pin you.
Yeah, there was, I don't know.
I think you can do funky
weird I think stuff with hindsight, with I probably... Waver. I probably should have just done it because, you know, Steve's a fast player, I'm a fast player, so I'm never going to win a defensive battle like that by timing the game out. So I set up my infantry in the foxholes, anti-tank guns in ambush, everything else in reserve, and he basically just had free rein to roll buckets and buckets and buckets of dice at me. You know, take away recce, just... And even with machine guns and 5-up, but you know, 15 mil / 50 cals, however you want to refer to them. It was just, it was so much dice and we were playing so quickly that I think it was like turn 9 or 10 or, you know, before I even sort of popped my ambush. Reserves came on and tried to use their range versus his tanks, because his tanks have got 24-inch range. I think mine are 36.
The 32-inch range,
or the opposite. Sorry, he's a 16. I'm 24.
Yeah.
That's
more like it.
So, sort of tried to have all the tanks and the ambush go against one, but just my dice failed, and then the sheer amount of returned firepower started to ping off the guns and ping off the tanks, and eventually, once he'd rid of all my anti-tank abilities, he then sort of came in for the final push to. Shove me off the objective, and it was pretty much a bloodbath. With hindsight, it probably should have attacked just for something to do, just to see if it would have been any better. But
I think you could have given him a run for his money because, say, those Japanese infantry units attacking at night.
Mm.
If you can get your first assault in at night,
yeah.
You're actually very, very likely to get in. You need a lot of shots to stop you.
Yeah,
and once you're on the objective.
I think the thing is though with because it's not very mobile, it's just
he could be sneaky and use recce moves to hold you back.
Yeah. And also
it's quite nasty.
It's one of those that like if I can't really fragment his force because realistically the only objective I can go for is the forwardish one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm even with my double in at night, I've still gotta cover a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
So he can basically just pile up because I've got no air support, I've got a crappy template. He can basically just line up all the machine guns in the world, and I've got to be really good with my tanks to knock out his anti-tank stuff.
Mm.
So I don't know. I think at the end of the day, Steve's army was a really good matchup for him. It's kind of British, lots of machine guns. I think realistically, I would struggle to attack the T-26s. We're going to ignore the game that we had because I think that was freak dice at the right time. But I think trying to assault into lots of machine guns is where the Japanese start to fall over. If you've got a savvy player that knows how the rules work, because I think a lot of the Japanese rules can be exploited by people that don't really know how they're supposed to work. For example, one of the things that I didn't actually realise is the big banner, it's only auto-pass motivation tests for the regiment. So the combat platoons and the weapons platoons, but any of the support that's from a different division, it doesn't count that. It actually says in the rules from the same division. So that's one of those things, like, you know, you've got a banner with some tanks. The tanks don't actually benefit from the banner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. And there's all sorts of other little tricks. Yeah. You know, it's one of those that...
One of the reasons having rules in the supplements that not everybody owns is a bad idea.
Mm.
One book to rule them all.
That's where rules should be.
So, yeah, unfortunately, it was a 6-1. I think he got all the bonus points. Because we were playing, sorry, should mention, playing the co-rivalry scoring system. So what would have been a 6-1 was a 20-1. So, yeah, that was my game too. Well, Hammy, what about yours?
My game too was against Italian tanks. An interesting list. Chris from down the road.
Yeah, Chris, one of the Stockport
with
lads.
More tanks than you can possibly imagine. It was quite scary. I think he had 4 units of 4 tanks, all front armour 3 and anti-tank 6.
Yeah.
Pretty much what we proved, even though a load of these tanks were in reserve, what I kind of proved was that front armour 3 trained tanks with anti-tank 6 are actually better than front armour 3 veteran tanks with anti-tank 7.
Mm.
Don't forget the you've got the better.
How much? Power. How cheap are they? Because obviously the variable skill rating makes them cheap.
The army he fielded had 2 75mm guns. I think, certainly 12, but I think 16 tanks plus a commander. And some AA guns and a battery of heavier artillery. And some motorbike mounted recce. Mm. It was big army, loads of it. So I was basically facing loads of tanks with 4 Panzer IVs and 3 Panzer 38Ts.
So he's a tank army as well. So were you attacking or defending?
I attacked.
You attacked. Yeah.
Which was relatively good. Mm. He put his first platoon, I don't think he even ambushed. I think he twigged that ambushing might be a bad idea because I had 8 brands that could do nasty
push him
things.
Back. Yeah.
I put the 88s as far forward as I could get them, covering the forward objective. Unfortunately, they couldn't cover too much either side of it because of the way the terrain was. But anything contesting the objective was 88 bait. I advanced forward with 4 Panzer IVs, threatened on one flank with the Panzer Ones just to try and distract him a bit, and sent the Panzer 38s down the other flank. Panzer IVs went forward. I managed to kill a couple of the first tank platoon.
Mm-hmm.
But then the remaining 3 tanks of that tank platoon decided that they were going to prove that Italian tanks were actually better than Panzer IVs. I think I ended up... I only lost 2 of the 4 Panzer IVs, but it was still pretty hairy. Mm. The Panzer 38Ts on the flank went charging round. One of them got a little bit too near his tanks. So he got 6 long-range shots at one poor Panzer 38T. Hit it 6 times, it died. Sort of the saga of the weekend, really. My saves were terrible. It's so frustrating when you need a 3 to save and you roll a 1 or a 2.
Mm.
It happens a lot. In the end, 2 Panzer IVs, that one of the 8 rads was contesting the objective. That died. The other 8 rad went and hid in a wood. The Panzer 38T platoon did die. I was down to 2 Panzer IVs. The Panzer Ones were heroes. They took out his artillery. The 75mm ones anyway. And then charged down the flank, murdered the machine gun platoon, killed the AA platoon. One of his tank platoons died. I think in the end I killed 2 tank platoons, but I just couldn't prize him off the objective because there were just too many tanks.
Hmm.
And I was down to basically 2 Panzer IVs at the end of the game.
Right.
My CO got bailed about 7 times. Never died, but he got bailed about 7 times. So in the end, it sort of balanced out. It's a
very protected ammo.
Yeah.
It was a good game, but I just didn't have enough stuff to push the objective.
Hmm.
Because I can't kill that many tanks.
Yeah. So did that finish as a timeout?
Timed out 4-3-2 the defender.
Cool. Fraser, yourself?
The Stukas covered themselves in glory.
Right.
So I was playing Martin Hare, and he's got his French. So it's a French infantry army with Panhards, three Charbies, some arty, some stuff. He puts the Charbies in ambush.
Mm-hmm.
So I push my 8 rads as far forward to cover the objective as I can. He's got his infantry and 25mm anti-tank guns covering the forward objective.
Mm-hmm.
So I just trundle up to it and shoot what I can. Nothing happens. 8 rads go right up so he can't ambush the Charbies on the front edge of the forest.
Mm-hmm.
He has to put them... In his first turn, he ambushes them, but he has to put them at long range. So he does. He keeps them all near forests. Quite a lot of forest in his deployment zone. All within 2 inches of a forest. So that he can... I have to range in with the Stukas. And he shoots at long range with quite... It's an alarmingly large amount of anti-tank 6 shots for 3 tanks. But that completely whiffed. Because it just bounced off the front. Because it's at long range. Long range definitely helped.
Mm.
5 to hit. Effective armor 3.
Hammy's nodding his head like, not in my case.
Yeah, that's how you do it, Hammy. What you want to do is
long range, front armor 3 goes to armor 4 against anti-tank 6. End result, you die.
Still roll a 1, still
die. I don't have this problem, Hammy. Clearly, it's a skill issue.
Yeah, it must be. Anyway, go on, keep going. The mighty Stukas.
Here we go. So, these, I don't know exactly how many points this Charby platoon is, but there was a 5 and 2 other numbers after it.
Mm-hmm.
Stuka comes in, ranges in, of course, because I can roll higher than a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Gets 2 of them under the template because he just had to position them like that in order to get shots. Hits them both, as per standard.
Standard.
Top armor 2, so he's reasonably confident.
Yep.
Snake eyes, of course.
And then the classic follow-up of you then rolling snake eyes.
Nope.
Didn't happen.
No. I actually passed firepower for my Stukas for a change, Andy. and your BAR, immune to conventional weaponry. So 2 of those went up in smoke. And the tanks just faffed around, shooting infantry to no effect.
I think the other one ran away, didn't it?
It did, but not for a while. It only ran away when I remembered it was going to run away, because we both forgot for a while.
You forgot to take its morale.
Right. Yeah, and my Panzer
quality twos, levels of play here. People don't know the rules
exactly.
My Panzer twos and the two IC meanwhile had been doubling all the way up to the back. They eventually got to the back of his table edge and murdered reserves as they came on.
Okay.
You don't often get to be able to reserve snipe in Nova Retreat, so that is quite impressive.
It's good effort. Good.
They did that, and they were about to assault his artillery from behind. I lost that game, of course, because it timed out. Panhard sailed onto the objective after I'd finished clearing the forest of French.
Right, so he just kept the game going.
So I killed most of his army, lost almost nothing, and then he drove a jeep onto the objective.
Well, but what's the motto? What's the motto for the game? You've got to get the objectives.
Play infantry myself and win the time out. Oh no, sorry, wrong motto. Yeah, play faster.
Yeah,
it was a great game. It was very funny, but yeah, play faster, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's, joking aside, that is quite important. You don't want to rush too fast so that you make mistakes and get rules wrong, but if there's, sometimes I've played players and they think, there are only 2 things for you here to do. Re-roll to unpin your infantry and fire your artillery. Why is it taking you half an hour to think about what you want to do? Mm. You know. So, we go into round 3 and... this was a very frustrating scenario to end a tournament on. We played Encounter. I'm not a massive fan of Encounter. I'll play it. I think it's quite frustrating to finish a one dayer on. Because it's kind of... I think if you're going to play a fair fight, and I think I like the idea of mobile battle, defensive battle, fair fight, I think you've got to play Dust Up.
Why? How's Dust Up different to Encounter?
Because it's just better. It just allows more...
I wouldn't say it's that much better. It's still got delayed reserves. It's still half on, half off.
But it's the...
And getting very samey. We're playing an awful lot of Dust
Up. We are playing a lot of Dust Up, but I think it takes away the random element, and especially for the last game of an event, where I think the tactical prowess of a player has to come through a bit more. I think Dust Up is a better fair fight to play because it's more tactical. You've got different options for how to win in Dust Up. You know, you can either make that early charge for the objective across the thing, or you can wait for your reserves to come on and do the long. Depending on your list and what you've got and things like that, I think it's rather than essentially both players being stuck and waiting for reserves, that and then one player gets his reserves in the completely wrong place of where he wants.
I think the trick with Dust Up, with the encounter rather, is to the real problem with encounter is infantry winning it with an infantry army attacking. It's really hard because infantry on moving forward and then all of a sudden ping a bunch of machine guns appear and you're in trouble. But I don't mind. Encounter's fair. I'll play encounter. It was all right. I lost, but it was all right.
So while we're saying that winning with infantry in encounter is really hard, so I got James the Grey Wolf. And he's running infantry. I'm running infantry. So we roll off to attack, and I get to attack. And the beauty of the Japanese in a fair fight is, even if you're the attacker in a fair fight mission, you can still night attack.
See, cheesy rules. Nice attack, move at the double that night.
Pretty much.
Oh, look, I'm on the objective. Oh, look, I've won.
Yep. Pretty much. So I thought, you know what?
Game of skill, you know.
We'll go for it. We'll fling. So started with two infantry platoons and mortars, I thought. Wow. Because it was one of those situations where play the player, not the mission and not the army, and thinking, I make a guess, having never played James before, but I'm going to hazard a guess that he's going to sit in his he's going to dig in, sit in his foxholes and wait for reserves. And I think me running at him at the double on the first turn is going to really throw him off his plan. So one infantry, both of them are kind of central, but one is edging towards one objective and the other is edging towards another because I don't want to. I need a backup in case one doesn't go for. He pushes. So he starts with his, I think he's got 8 platoons. So he starts with 2 infantry platoons. Or maybe it was 1 infantry platoon. I think it might have been 1 infantry platoon, anti-tank guns, 25 pounders, and his recce hiding behind a wood. I don't know whether the recce was, I'm going to sort of trundle up and try and sneakily grab an objective. So infantry bundle forward, he brings up the recce armoured cars to shoot one of the infantry platoons, but manages not to pin them. Even with the double shots.
Yeah, still hitting on 5.
So, but it was quite lucky.
18 shots hitting on 5s, 6 hits.
The actual,
on average, should just get
the actual more luck is when you manage to save all the hits. You know, even though it's a 3-0.
That's starting to get a bit rude.
Yeah. The real frustrating thing when you do the double in at night is when your opponent gets an average amount of hits.
How did he even get into range then?
He just trundled them up.
Because he can only move 8 inches at night.
Yeah, but I think he'd...
And then he's got to roll a big number to be able to see you as
well. Oh, yeah, which he did. He rolled 6.
Okay. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, it's not that... And then he's got slightly less than average to hit.
Yeah.
Assuming your flag was, of course, in the right place.
I think... the banners on the units are anyway, so he needs 6 hits on each platoon anyway.
Yeah, but one of the hits has to be on the banner chap, doesn't it?
It's just a flat upgrade
to the unit. Oh, right. Yeah. The big banner is auto-pass motivation checks, which is... I think that one was on the other end.
Japanese special rules are us.
Yeah. So he starts to get reserves before I do, but... Basically, I've sort of managed to push both platoons up reasonably far forward. One of them sort of stuck around and dug in just in case they were needed. And then, through a combination of mortar fire and rifle fire, managed to kill off a couple of the 25-pounders, which shut down his artillery. And then sort of pushed in, assaulted, pushed one of his platoons off the objective. Then... So one of his infantry platoons is on 2 teams, I think.
It's not good.
He gets another one from reserve, which comes in on the corner where the objective is that I'm assaulted. So then he moves up and he goes to assault. And what he does is he assaults with the depleted platoon first, which is towards the centre of the board.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in, they kill a team. I counter assault, move, squish the team. I then consolidate so that I was more than 4 inches away. And then the second platoon couldn't assault.
I think you got that wrong.
Yeah, Randy.
Really?
Yep. I think assaulting abandoned positions kicks in here.
Ah, okay.
Even though the teams weren't destroyed, what it says in the rule is if a team from your platoon that was in a position to launch an assault at the start of the shooting step
mm-hmm.
is able to launch an assault in the assault step, but cannot because the enemy team that it would have assaulted are no longer there, or teams that it would have assaulted are no longer there,
mm-hmm.
your platoon may still launch an assault.
Right, okay.
So it doesn't actually mention that they're destroyed. The rule's titled Assaulting Abandoned, so effectively the positions are abandoned.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that he could have assaulted. Now, right. That might not have been a good thing,
mm.
because if he launches an assault on abandoned positions
mm.
and can't get within 2 inches, he's got no chance to do any damage to you at all.
Right.
And you'll get defensive fire.
Right.
The only negative is you've got to roll a motivation test to assault, but then you're Japanese and you've got the magic we pass motivation.
Ah, so we should have carried on playing and at least tried to finish it out.
What I think would have happened is he would have launched an assault, you'd have fired defensive fire,
mm.
he might have got one or maybe two swings at you, but probably no more.
Mm.
But then you could have set it up so that pretty much your whole platoon would have countered.
I presume counter-assaults.
And he would have then been on the wrong end of a load of veteran stabbing.
Veterans and swords, because sword teams hit on a 2+ as well. So
yeah. So I think I thought you were going to say being clever. We've been really clever, and it was all thought, oh, isn't that very clever?
Well,
I'm impressed.
It was actually looking like it was James's mistake that, you know, threw his own game away. But mm-hmm. had I known that rule, you know, maybe I will be more clever in the future thinking about it. But James, yes, so personal apology. I am sorry. I cheated you out of our game. I sincerely apologize.
Would still have won anyway.
Japanese players.
Possibly.
No, I think probably, because if you can make it so his initial assault only gets us one or maybe at most one or two swings,
mm.
then your counter assault will be ferocious and you will never fail morale.
Yeah, yeah.
So you will, unless he can wipe you out with that assault. If there's nothing else that can contest the objective, come the end of the assault phase, you'll be on the objective and you'll have won the game.
True, true. The thing is, though, is it's not necessarily a case of whether I was going to win or not. It's how much I win by, you know, because obviously it was a 6-1, whereas it's possible with a few more turns.
No, I don't think he'd have had another turn.
Right.
Because he had to assault to contest the objective, presumably.
Yes, yes, he did.
So he assaults, but the only way he's going
to
contest the objective is if your Japanese fail is if you lose the assault.
Right.
And you're not going to lose the assault because you never fail morale.
Yes, that's true. And actually, I've got more teams than him, so on
average.
And
you're probably veteran. Or he might be veteran
I think
as well.
He was veteran as well.
But if you negate his initial combat swing, I think the end result's probably not changed.
Mm.
But technically, he could have assaulted.
Yes. Well, I apologise, James, and next time I come up to Preston, we'll have a rematch and we'll play it properly. So, yeah, that was my slightly cloudy game.
Sorry,
something
Andy.
Like that. No, it's fine. You know, none of us are perfect, so we all get rules wrong. So, Hammy, how did your game go?
Last game I played Mr. Catlow.
Mm.
Lots of Panzer 38 Ts. My second out of three... blue on blue game.
Yeah, so I should mention actually, because when we went into round three, sort of a few of us had started sort of totting up in our head who was on which points and who, and I think Roger Whittam thought he'd be playing me because we were on the same points, and then I got drawn against James, and I was sure that James had at least lost a game or maybe two games along the way. And that's when the lads announced that actually it was supposed to be red on blue, and they'd lumped the Japanese in the Axis camp, and I think lumped the Soviets in the Allied camp, which some people do for early war, some people argue it. But yeah, you played blue
and blue
in
game two and blue and blue in game three.
So there's obviously an abundance of German players.
There were quite a lot of Germans, I think, yeah. Mm. But, so playing Andy Catlow, Panzer 38Ts, he's got more tanks than me. I've got better tanks, in theory. Got one more armour, one more anti-tank. The game started okay. I had three Panzer 38s and four Panzer 4s on the table. He had two lots of Panzer 38s. He had an aeroplane that didn't really... No, I had 88s on the table at the beginning, I think. I think I had eight. Must have had 88s on
it. He likes his 88s.
Yeah, 88s. And it was 88s and 38Ts and the CO. And the other Panzer 4s came on partway through. Came on first reserve, I think. The 88s weren't doing very much, but there was shot down the Stuka a few times. Some Panzer 4s, my CO and 2IC were busy trying to snipe and play clever people. And I bailed the odd Panzer 38T here and there, kept on failing firepowers the way you do in early war. So that's the way of it. One Panzer 38T managed to get bailed and then stuck, left sitting on a road. And I got four tanks shooting at a tank stationary on the road at short range and missed, which is great. But then my reserves came on, his reserves came on. I did some more sneaky dodging around. It was quite good. I was manoeuvring, getting decent shots on him, and he wasn't getting much of a return shot. And I started forcing him back on the left flank. And it ended up with him having four Panzer 38Ts that were hiding behind a hill. Well, one was bailed on a hill by a lucky shot. Eventually, that one unbailed. The other three drove up the hill, and we got into a little duel between these four Panzer 38Ts and two or three Panzer 4s. And, it was two Panzer 4s from the platoon plus the CO. I thought it was a decent duel. I've got one better anti-tank, one better armour, and it's at long range.
Mm-hmm.
Should be able to hurt him quite badly, even though he's more likely to hit me. End result, he shoots, bails both of my Panzer 4s with two hits. Long range with anti-tank 6. Then his plane comes in, gets past the 88 anti-aircraft, drops a bomb on top of the Panzer 4. I think it might have only been one plane. Hits it, bails it again. Well, fortunate, okay. I suppose. Fails morale, so it's got to run away.
Mm-hmm.
Join the CO to the platoon, because I might as well. It's a running away tank. Re-roll the running away of the tank. It still runs away. Roll the platoon morale. Failed. Re-roll the platoon morale. Failed. CO and the other Panzer IV go away. So there you go. Three Panzer IVs lost to long-range shooting from anti-tank 6 guns.
Wow. That was clearly your fault, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it... And then on the other side, I just got swamped in the end. There were three Panzer 38s that were trying to fight against all his reserves. I was pushing against the objective, and unfortunately, one of his reserve platoons came on at the right place at the right time, which is part of the mission.
Yeah.
Long and short, my army did not have enough mobile stuff in it. The 88s were great in theory, but they couldn't project force where I needed it to be projected. Mm. Maybe six Panzer IVs would work better. Two platoons of two, plus the CO, plus the command. But I only had four models, so that's why I had four Panzer IVs.
Sure.
Basically, I was let down by not a huge number of models, and then you roll bad dice at the wrong point in time.
Okay.
A bit like the disastrous Tiger list in the mid-war tournament in Wales.
So, Fraser, what about your game three?
Another exciting Phantasmic Oracle game. I had three really good games. It was against Ian's BAR.
Okay.
Pretty good matchup. My tank's a veteran. His tanks have got tally-ho, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. We've got... He puts a platoon of cruiser tanks on and some light tanks on. If I remember correctly, the cruiser tanks were hiding with the CEO in a wood.
Mm-hmm.
I put just the Czech panzers on, so I've got the 8 rads and panzer 2s in reserve. I pretty much spread out across the whole board in concealment where possible. And he comes at me with the... All his reserves turned up in the same place throughout the whole game. So he brings all his light tanks on, and it was like playing Space Invaders for about four turns. It's just this wave of light tanks coming
so just
at me.
The classic German shoot stormtrooper way.
Yeah.
Pop out, shoot, stormtrooper way, just
yeah.
down.
Yeah, basically. After a while, I just sat there because there's just wave after wave of light tanks coming towards me, doing nothing. And okay. it's just a big tank graveyard over
so you're,
there.
So you're in a good position. You're yep. knocking out British tanks left
absolutely,
and right.
Absolutely fantastic.
And then you close the game.
And
my, went home
absolutely, happy. I lost. I snatched defeat from
only
the jaws
you.
Of
only
victory. And my Stuka got a platoon of cruiser tanks as well, and a couple of cruiser tanks here and there. Definitely made it points back anyway. So I didn't know why his cruiser tanks were just sat behind a forest for the whole game. So I kind of came forward to play a bit because I didn't know what the tally hole rule is. I just thought it was
yes,
full rough.
Yes, you do.
I didn't know it was within 16, so I ambled forward with it to within 12 plus 16, and he jumps out, and he's got three tanks, six shots. He's hitting me on five because I'm concealed. So, of course, all six hit. All six penetrate. All six pass firepower. So that's a platoon of five Czech panzers and the CO. At alpha strikes.
Wow.
Oh, right, okay. That was impressive. I bet he can't do it again. Yeah.
Famous so the, last words.
So the other Czech panzer platoon kind of wanders over to see what all those explosions and screaming in German was. And the exact same thing happens again.
No.
Six shots, six hits, six failed armour, six passed.
Wow.
Firepower.
Sounds like Mr. Crosby's dice were just on fire that weekend.
They were pretty awful until that point, to be honest.
Right.
At the end of the game, he had four tanks left in total, and I had three tanks left in total. So we'd had a good scrap. It's just that the tanks he had left included his company boss.
Right, okay.
And mine didn't, so he won.
Uh-huh.
It was okay. a good game.
Cool.
Lots of wrecked tanks.
Okay, so... Running places, finishing positions, top three, top five, in first place was Mr. Paul Chambers from Stafford with KVs, wasn't it? Oh, no,
Strelkovy,
that was
Strelkovy,
it.
Strelkovy, Mass Strelkovy, not conscript Strelkovy, though. I think he was the
in
trained
red
version.
Banner, red banner,
yeah.
Yeah,
red
the trained, trained version. Yeah. Second place, Mr. Charlton with his, I think...
Cars.
Paul and Steve were tied on points. I'm not mm-hmm. entirely sure how they worked the tiebreaker.
They flipped a coin.
Right, okay, the classic. Okay. So then in third place was Mr. Andrew Brookley from Stafford.
Yeah. Who was using...
He was using...
Yeah, Tankerby.
KVs and T-28s and something else.
Yeah, he was like the heavy tank.
It was a heavy tank of
BT-7s.
BT-7As, I think it was the assault gun version.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Because I think he was running, yeah.
It was mostly T-28s and some KVs.
Yeah, yeah.
Why couldn't I end up fighting a list like that? That would be great.
Why couldn't I have ended up fighting a list like that?
You'd lose to it with your dice and then complain anyway.
Well, I'm not sure. I think KVs like, you know... That's what the 88s are for, isn't it?
Mm.
But you'd miss it.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, you would.
Because they're conscript and they're really hard to hit. Yeah,
yeah.
I thought about that.
So tied in third and fourth was John Hopwood with Andy. I'm not sure what John was taking.
I can't remember what John used.
No, sorry. John. And then I scored fifth place, and I was 1 point behind John and Andy because it was quite close in the end.
Yeah, nobody won all three
nobody
games.
Nobody won all three.
Some people won two and then had a timed out fair fight with
yeah.
not much score.
Yeah, that's what
so,
happened
there
with
was
Steve.
An awful, it was really, really close between the top bunch.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What did Roger?
Rog had Japanese cavalry.
Oh, yeah, Japanese cavalry.
Because he was telling me about the reason for taking cavalry over infantry, and I think it was something to do with the fact that he didn't want to have the choice to night attack or something like that. He wanted to defend against tanks and attack infantry. He didn't want to, but it was something like that reason
okay.
why he was valuing cavalry over infantry.
Mm-hmm. Something esoteric.
Yeah, but he had reasonably similar list to mine. So anything we'd change about our list? Obviously, Hammy, I think you'd throw your entire list in the bin or keep the list but throw the dice in the bin.
In theory, on paper, there is nothing wrong with a Panzer IV D in early war.
Yeah.
It's got better than average anti-tank, better than average armour, it's veteran, they're not that expensive, and it's got firepower 3.
Mm.
It's a good tank.
Mm.
I think they're 150 points each or something, 300
yes,
for two.
Yes, it's 150 points
yeah.
for one.
So I think they're, you know, they're pretty good. 38 T's, decent. I can't really see what was wrong with the list. I don't know. No, what would I change? All of it's there for a good reason. The list is good. It could, against a different set of opponents and with slightly marginally better dice, it could have done a lot better.
How many points are the 88s?
Something like 280.
And how does that translate to swapping the...
Nearly two more Panzer IVDs.
Right, I was going to say, swapping the 88s for air support and then making up a fourth platoon out of the remaining...
Would be pretty rubbish, the fourth platoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether...
To get air support, the problem is you've got 300 points in your HQ, 300 points in the Panzer IVs. I can't remember where all points
I'm just wondering out loud whether
as an
anti-tank solution for dealing with the heavier stuff, whether the Stuka would be better than the 88s.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly.
But it's whether the points match to make
the
up
nice,
a decent
the way 88s work when the game's working well, if you're attacking, which with a tank list you should be, you should be able to get the 88s so that they are covering the objective that you're trying to take.
Right.
If you can make it so that any enemy that are going to be defending the objective are going to be 88'd to death, that's got quite a lot of plus points.
Yeah. And that's a bonus over the air support because, obviously, as you get closer to the objective, air support becomes more about picking off what you can rather than...
I mean, realistically, you're looking at, I think, 300 points for the HQ, 300 points for the platoon of Panzer IVs, 300 points for the 88, 300 or so points for the Panzer 38Ts.
Yeah.
Because they're about 100 points each, aren't they?
Less than that.
About 100.
Five is 400. I don't know.
Yeah,
something.
Then you've got the eight rads, and all the Panzer ones, six Panzer ones, which is the assault unit.
Yeah.
Would I change it? Don't know. Am I ever going to use it again? Probably not.
That's it. Fraser, yourself.
Mr. Catley's list is a more sensible version of my list. He drops the Super Stuka Party and a Czech Panzer from each platoon to get his smoke and his infantry.
Because he has the Nebelwerfers.
He's got the early Nebelwerfers.
The water Nebelwerfers.
I pretty much lost game two because I didn't have infantry. But I wouldn't change it because I like my list.
The curious thing as well is actually I'm pretty sure I've read on Mr. Catlow's blog, but if you ask Mr. Catlow, he might actually say the opposite. He thinks the infantry are a waste of time.
What doesn't he like about it?
I think it's...
Not enough of them. And they're only trained, I think.
Yeah. Do they auto pass tank terror, though?
They do auto pass tank terror.
And we've got Panzernackers. Yeah. It's okay. I wouldn't change anything in my list, to be honest. Because the Stuka is hilarious when it works. My list isn't optimal, but it's hilarious, and I get a lot of tanks.
If my first game had been drawn against the guy that won the tournament, I'd probably have beaten him.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Okay.
Because I'd be more than happy to play against...
Russian Strelka
with my list. Okay. Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, so good event. Everyone had fun.
Yeah.
Or as fun as you can have when you're rolling ones all the time. But, you know, recommended. They got two more coming up later in the year. We're going to do mid-war and late-war. So we'll post about those nearer the time and we might try and get one of the lads on the show in the future to have a chat about it. So we'll take a short break and then when we come back, we're going to be talking about reserves. So see you in a bit. And welcome back to Fire for Effect. So we are now talking we were talking last week about new sections and things like that. And so we've got I've come up with the idea of a section called Back to Basics, named after a failed Conservative Party policy in the late 80s. The idea of this one is basically we just sort of look back over sort of core fundamentals of how games of Flames of War are played and things that might be second nature to experienced players, but maybe not for early players. So the topic of this episode is reserves. So, general overview of reserves. Basically, in a standard mission, you would have one of the reserve options. The main two being standard reserves, just reserves, or delayed reserves. And the mission will usually tell you to put up to half of your list in reserves. Now, what this means is...
It's normally up to half on table.
Is it, or is it up to half in reserve?
If you've got odd numbers, you can't have more than half. On table, so it's
or
up
maybe
to
is,
half.
It, is it at least half in reserve?
At least half.
Either way, if you've got five platoons, two are starting on table, three are in reserve.
Yeah.
So obviously, what this means, you know, is a lot of players tend to build their lists fit exactly even platoons. So in a 50-50 mission, you're starting with exactly half rather than starting down.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily always that's the case. And in some cases, you might think, well, actually, you know what? I've got seven platoons, but I'm quite happy to start with four on if I'm defending.
You mean three on?
With three on, sorry. Yeah. How do we get into this?
So,
really,
two different kinds of reserves.
Yep.
There's the at least half in reserves, and then there's mobile reserves,
mm-hmm.
which I think we do mobile reserves later.
Absolutely.
Normal reserves, you've got some missions where it's defenders' reserves, some missions where the attacker's got reserves.
Mm-hmm.
You also have missions where the reserves don't come on behind your lines, which can be really significant. So, for example, Dust Up and Cauldron
mm-hmm.
are missions where there are reserves that are actually more reinforcements.
Yeah.
So I think you need to consider three possible options.
Mm.
One is reserves. These are troops that will come on behind your lines to reinforce your force.
Yeah.
Then you've got reinforcements, which are reserves that will come off on isolated and potentially have to support
come on
themselves
and form effectively like a second wave of attack, you know, if you're playing an aggressive
And then there's mobile reserves, which is the other thing. You always in my head have to consider what you will do if you're going to defend. How am I going to, if I'm going to be half on table on a defensive mission, what am I going to use?
So even with an attacking list, like a tank lists especially have to think about how they're going to defend.
And, auto-attack tank lists in late war. There's so many auto-attack tank lists out there. You know, do you want a tournament ruined by the fact that your auto-attack tank list had to defend in one mission because you faced another auto-attack tank list?
Absolutely.
I think a number of people get really, really hung up on that I must have an even number of platoons.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're better to think about it not in terms of half my platoons on the table. It's what do I get for my half the platoons on table.
Yeah.
So
so with this in mind, we're thinking about front loading effectively. Is that what you mean?
Not entirely about front loading. It's about balance. Okay. And I've run a five platoon list on a number of occasions, which mm-hmm. most people would think is a really mad number to use.
Yeah.
But actually, the five platoon lists that I've used, one of the platoons was a really small recce platoon.
Right.
Now, if you're defending, you don't need the really small wrecking platoon on the table.
The only time it
hurts is in hasty attack,
mm.
where you only get two platoons on table and you possibly want your recce on at the start.
Mm.
But in most missions, trying to think what the list was, it was something like... Often it happens with Tankerville. Happening with Tankerville, where you end up with perhaps three big companies of tanks, some SU-100s and some recce.
Mm.
Maybe Spetsnaz, the 100-point Spetsnaz or something. Yeah. If you only have to have half your platoons on table, 21 tanks, that's probably enough. Mm. On the other hand, you need to think about not just about the numbers of platoons. Five platoons can work. It's an odd number.
It's situational, isn't it?
Yeah. And the certain list will work on five platoons. As a general rule, most people will go, oh, I'll have eight platoons. I'll have a little mortar platoon, a recce platoon, a short HMG platoon, and then I'll get 85% of my force on table at the start of the game. Isn't that brilliant? Yeah, it's kind of good.
When Cauldron happens.
Until you end up playing Cauldron or Dust Up.
Yeah.
Both of which are, that's by the reclassified thing, they're reinforcement missions.
Mm.
And somebody just watches your reserves wander onto table and die. Mm. Well, the worst example I ever came across of that was at, it was a tournament at Derby, and there was a chap who had a German fortified list. Ah, that's something we need to add into the discussion later on, fortified platoons.
Mm, yeah.
German fortified list in dust-up against my American armoured rifles, and one quarter of the table was completely filled with fortifications, with all the objectives in, and half his force was off table.
Yep.
So I drove a load of armoured half-tracks down, parked, waiting for his reserves to come on, which were all rubbish infantry, a very poor quality troops. His reserves arrived, died. That's half his army killed. Yep. I now need to kill one more platoon.
Yeah.
He happened to have some trained 88s sitting in the middle of his deployment area. So you send out bait, wait for his 88s to shoot you. Then you know where the 88s are. They're no longer gone to ground, and you kill them with artillery or something.
Everything else.
And that platoon runs away, and his army...
Waiting for his
army to break, basically. Yep. It's not a very, very interesting form of game. And to be honest, I think... Well, that particular list, he didn't have any choice as to what was on table and what wasn't on table.
Yeah.
But missions like Dust Up, you almost need to be able to split your force into two separate groups, one of which can defend and project helpfully for the attack.
Yeah.
And one which would attack. So
or
maybe,
at least possibly pick one of your attacking platoons to become part of the second wave and then support it with, you know, things like that. I mean, Dust Up's an interesting mission anyway, because some players will just sit and wait for reserves. And, you know, I think leading into missions like Cauldron and Dust Up is what you can do is reserve snipe, not just with, you know, like fast recce stuff, but also like in Dust Up, the stuff you start with. So, for example, if I'm going to sit with some tanks on my side, I'll spend the first couple of turns moving them up to take up concealed firing positions. And then when the reserves arrive, I get a full ROF, you know, from a nice concealed firing position straight in, you know. Mm. So I think that's one of the things that people need to consider.
Had an amusing game where of Cauldron a number of years ago where I was fighting with early war Germans against Strelkovi.
Mm.
And it was in the early, the first time the Strelk came out, so the guy had the massed 12-gun artillery battery and huge infantry units and whatever. And I had a pioneer unit in reserve, German full-strength 10-team pioneer unit in reserve with flamethrowers.
Mm.
And it came on turn four-ish when there was an AA unit, Soviet three AA guns had driven along to wait for the reserves to arrive. And they were sadly far too near the area the reserves were going to arrive. And on turn one, I think the reserves came on, flamethrowed the... flamethrowed the trucks. Oops.
Yeah.
And then assaulted the rear of the artillery battery. It wasn't very pretty.
I had quite a good example of one of the co-rivalries when I was running my US engineers playing against, I think it was German Grenadiers with Carius and Kircher. And my tank destroyer, recce platoon, tank destroyers, trundled up and basically waited for the reserves to arrive. And first reserve platoon that came on was Carius and Kircher, who shot at a recce jeep, and the jeep went bothered. Not. And then in my turn, I got to pop the tank destroyers and run the bazookas up, and I think killed Kircher, bailed Carius, and then the bazookas went and bagged him. You know, it's just like job done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
yeah, I think that was the same co-rivalry I was playing Cauldron against. What is the German list with all the 88s from Bridge
by Bridge?
Something like that.
Yeah. Sroboda, very good.
Something. Yep. And he had to defend in Cauldron.
Yeah.
I was using my Chaffees. So wait for the platoons of lone 88s to show up, have a crack at my gone to ground veteran Chaffees, who would then whip around the gun shield and just stab it.
Yeah, with the tank. Exactly.
So I think the thing with reserves is some people work a list out and they have this thing in their head that whenever I play a game which is half on, half off, this is what I will do. You have to think where the reserves are going to appear.
Yep.
You have to think how the reserves are going to appear and what you're going to do with them. You know, are my reserves going to be vulnerable? I've played games where I've the units have been put in reserve were the ones that were survivable. That were the ones that had the chance to run away if they can't come on and get reserve sniped.
Mm.
So you do need to consider that, which is quite an...
I mean, sometimes it can't be helped. Like, some lists just, at the end of the day, have bad missions. You know, they kind of design themselves and they have bad missions, or they have, you know, they have not necessarily a bad mission, but they might have a, if you get a bad matchup and a bad mission, it becomes a non-game.
A lot of people, though, when they're thinking about reserves, focus the list on how can I get the maximum in half my list? And that's not actually what you need to do. Not for every mission. For some it is. Absolutely, but not for everyone.
Okay.
45 units?
Yeah, so 45 platoons can't go in reserve.
Are not allowed to be in reserve.
Not permitted.
So as far as I can tell, you could, in theory, have a force that's entirely fortified, therefore cannot be in reserve.
Mannerheim line.
So your whole force has to deploy on table in any mission with reserves.
Other examples, things like breaching groups. Breaching groups aren't allowed to go in reserve.
Correct.
As well, which causes
which
a massive...
Which quite a lot of people get wrong.
It causes a massive problem with armoured reserves as well. I remember when I was playing Keith Martin Smith at the Games Expo, and I was attacking him. We both always attack infantry, because he had infantry with a breaching group, and I had paras who couldn't night attack but could all, but were always attacking against other infantry. And I think before the game started, we must have had a 20-minute conversation going over the rule books. I think we got you involved at one point, because I didn't want him to start with his six breaching groups on the table. And as it later transpired, that actually starting with six breaching groups means you're not actually starting with anything else. And actually, when you've got naval gunfire support, six breaching groups is actually a really good thing to be picking off. So after I sort of argued it for 20 minutes, when we actually started playing, I just thought, this is actually really, really good for me. So the other caveat is things like, you know, we're talking about splitting your force 50-50, but also flexible armies, like, for example, Germans with the Kampfgruppe. Some of the British can make counterattack platoons. US with the option to dismount their recce patrols into one big platoon. Not many people do it, but it's an option.
Can do it.
You know, and things like that.
Kampfgruppe is something that you can do some clever things with with reserves.
Kampfgruppe is massive. Kampfgruppe actually can help you out with mobile reserves as well.
One thing a lot of people don't realise about Kampfgruppe is you can include weapons platoons in there as well. So you can actually have, because and for some of the German lists, things like the AA tanks, the weapons platoons.
I think some of the...
So you can get some really curious Kampfgruppe with mobile wagon in them and things
like
that.
Yeah, and you can get some of the nice, like the heavy platoons will have like mortars, HMGs, but then also have the 2519 Stummel cannons, so you can bung the Stummels into a platoon with tanks and stuff and have, you know, extra little firepower wandering around and stuff like that.
Mobile reserves.
Yes, so mobile reserves. So if you are defending in mobile reserves, you are only allowed one platoon with vehicles.
Yeah.
I believe is the rule. You can start your platoons with transports dismounted, but then they can't call their transports during the game.
If they're armoured transports, they can't call them back. If they're unarmoured, I think they can.
Okay.
And then there's if all the platoons in your force have got vehicles, then you can have two platoons.
Then you get to pick two. So, with that in mind, if you've got 5 points to spare, and you've got a nice tank list with lots and lots of tanks, and then three Nebelwerfers for smoke, it really might be a good idea to buy those three Nebelwerfers of transport.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so then you're not forced to deploy them if you defend in mobile reserves.
Another key thing about mobile reserves, lots and lots of people, you'll often be at a tournament when there's a breakthrough game or a... Breakthrough is the main one because that's the main mobile reserves one. But yeah. Although Counter-Attack's
mobile reserves. There's only two missions in the game with mobile reserves, Breakthrough and Counter-Attack.
You find the number of people who actually actively try and fight the game before their rest of their forces arrived.
Mm.
So they've got their two platoons on table.
Mm.
And they go out looking for the enemy.
Yeah.
And then wonder why their force breaks because they lose the two platoons that they've got before any reserves arrive.
Yeah. Because the other important point is that your platoons that are in reserve aren't counted as being on the table.
Correct.
So if you've got three platoons on the table when you start and you lose two of them, even though you've got another three in reserve, you are still taking company morale checks.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And you take your company morale check before the roll for reserves.
You do. So you don't even get a chance to get a platoon in. Mm. The other thing as well about mobile reserves, and I don't think you have it a lot these days, but I've seen some complaints on forums and people I've had people whinge to me in the past. Mobile reserves are reserves. You roll for them in turn one. They're not delayed reserves. Some people think that mobile reserves are delayed reserves.
There is one mission where you have mobile reserves and delayed reserves, but the mission and that's breakthrough.
Right. So that's not in the rule book. That's not a rule book mission.
Breakthrough is the rule book mission.
Or do you mean breakout?
Breakout. Breakout, not breakthrough, sorry. Breakout. Yeah. Breakout has delayed reserves and mobile reserves.
Yeah.
And people get confused over the fact that the mobile reserves are not delayed because the delayed reserves are for the attacker, the defender.
Yeah.
Whenever you have mobile reserves, if you have mobile reserves, you are on normal dice, so roll the dice first time. And
Absolutely.
What was that? That was the game. It was a dust-up I played against with mobile reserves with an all-mechanized force. Oh. Four platoons in reserve. And Von Sauken for re-rolling dice.
Oh yeah.
didn't get my first reserve until turn three. Got one more reserve on turn four and one more reserve on turn five, by which time I'd lost the game.
Yeah. we've all had games like that, and it is really frustrating when you, not through any fault of your own, you lose the game before you get any of your toys on the table.
You have to consider that. It's something that particular force that I was using was not a force that was designed for sensibility at all. It was that was four Tigers, some Panzerwerfers.
Was it a Panzer Spy list?
Yeah. Lux. Three platoons of Lux.
If Lux could kill.
Yeah. Three platoons of Lux and one platoon of Mobile AA.
The cutest tank in World War II.
And it had three warriors.
Yeah, Carius
Kircher and Von Sauken.
Don't you complain about warriors all the time?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all right when you use them.
No, I take.
We've got a massive warrior rant coming up in an upcoming podcast.
I'm trying to bait that out.
We're getting there. We're getting
fishing there. Expedition. What do you think of warriors, Hammy?
No, we'll leave that. We'll leave that for an upcoming one.
So I think the major thing about reserves is don't get a fixed plan.
Mm.
Consider the possibilities when you're building a list.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the start of a game where there are reserves. Yeah, you probably will use the planned combination of what you're going to have in reserve and so on.
Yeah.
But the number of people who, after they've played the first couple of games, then start messaging you saying, oh, I can do this and I can do that and I can do the other, and then I'll have these four platoons in reserve and these four platoons on table. Yeah, probably you will, but... Mm. It's not a set rule.
The other thing about reserves as well is it comes in, especially in missions like Cauldron and Dust Up, is that idea of play the player, not the army. And just because you were playing that army in a particular way, think, right, if I was playing that army, I would do this. So I'm going to play my army with that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about if you know the player, if you don't know the player, you know, see where possibly the player has stood in previous tournaments. You can, it's not an exact science, but sometimes you can gauge a player's ability, you know, based on the sort of, I mean, I'm sort of like higher level psychology kind of thing talking about here. But it's one of those things, like, you know, you get somebody playing in Dust Up, and you know that actually they're going to spend the first three turns digging in, fire their artillery. They're not going to, even though they might be in a really good board position, and they might have an army that, you know what, thinking, if you just ran at me, you'd win, and it'd be all over. You know they're not going to do that because their mentality or their hint, you know, how they react to the mission and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, use that to go for it. You know, I think the example that we talked about was, you know, in my game, attacking James in Encounter. It's just like, I'm just going to go for it with my infantry.
Something we haven't considered is the joy of scattered reserves.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Well, I won't. I think I made my case in the previous.
I think with scattered reserves, what you kind of need to do is, again, think about if you're going to be in a game where you will have scattered reserves, and there's two as the defender that have scattered reserves. Well, there's two, one fair fight and one defender battle, is make sure that the stuff, ideally the stuff that's coming on in scattered reserve, or at least some of it, can cope with appearing anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, maybe your artillery's in scattered reserve because, well, it can probably bombard from wherever it appears.
Yeah.
And maybe your armoured cars come on in scattered reserve because they can move.
Yeah, I made a major, major mistake at Derby when we did the Normandy, the Reluctant Conscripts Normandy event, defending with my paras and stuck two 17-pounders with trucks in reserve in Encounter. And when they finally arrived, it was just completely the wrong side of the battlefield. And it was just, they're just not
You're better off putting them in the middle on the table, even though it's only a two-gun platoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know for sure that they'll do something there, even if it's just deny table.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Think about the situation. Before you start every game, find out what the conditions are for winning. When do the objectives go live?
Yep.
Lots of people seem to think in the missions with mobile reserves that they've got to worry about defending the objectives before turn six.
Mm.
They don't.
Yeah. There's also the joy of random deployment we haven't covered.
Oh, yeah, random. Yes, it's not really the reserves, but yeah, random deployment in
reserves
Cauldron.
Reserves come in for the attack.
They do, yeah, that's true.
Because do you put your good stuff on at the start and risk it being deployed scattered to the winds, or do you put your good stuff in reserve and then you get pick what side it comes on?
Because your reserves, you know what's coming, you can know when it's coming on, and it's probably going to come on quite early.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the attacker, you can put Recce on at the start that's quite mobile or can hide, and then you bring your big tank units on from the flanks, or do you put the big tank units on at the start?
Well worth considering there, Fraser.
Absolutely.
Extra kudos to Fraser for cunning before we hadn't come across.
He surprises us every now and again.
Occasionally, he pops up.
Every now and again, he knows a rule as well. It's quite impressive.
So it says we're cheating Japanese.
Yes. I don't have to worry about rules. My Japanese just ignore them.
Your rule is you just win.
So, yeah. Well, hopefully we've given everyone a few ideas about reserves. So if you are a newish player and there's anything in particular you want us to cover, you know, feel free to get in contact with the show. We are on Facebook, Fire for Effect Podcast on Facebook. We've got a website now as well, fireforeffectpodcast.co.uk. There's not a lot on it at the moment. I still need to actually build a website, but we have got one. So there you go. And if you're listening and you run a blog, you run events, you run a shop, anything like that, we're looking at doing episode sponsorship. So if you want to sponsor an episode, get in touch, you know, just a small fee. We can give you listener stats and all that, so you know how many people you're reaching. But thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Okay, cheers.
Bye.